Perek Vav, Pirkei Avos, Mishnah Ches. Reb Shimon ben Asya, Mishum Shimon ben Yochai, Omer, Hanoi, beauty, Vakoyach, strength, Vaoysher, wealth, Vakovod, honor, Vachochma, wisdom, Vazikno, living long years, Vahaseva, different Madregas, 60 years old, 70 years old, Vahabonim, and children, Nolit Sadikim, Vinola Oilam. It's good for tzaddikim, it's good for the world. Shenemar, ateres teferes seifa, b'derech tzedakah timotzei. The crowning glory of old age is found in the path of tzedakah. V'oimen, it says, ateres chachamim ashram, the crown of the chachamim, of the wise, are their wealth. V'oimer, ateres ekenim b'nei banim, v'teferes banim avosam. The crown of the elderly are their grandchildren, and the glory of the children are their parents. V'omer tiferes bachurim kocham, v'hadar zekenim seiva. The glory of the young is their strength, and the glory of the elderly is their old age. V'omer v'chaf v'halvana v'shacham v'kimachshan tzavakas paratziyam v'shlayim, v'neged zekenov kavod. The sun and the moon will be embarrassed and ashamed when Hashem is melech and hartziyon v'shlayim, and they'll be covered for the zekenim. Shimonasi omer, Eile sheva midos, shemonu chachamim tzadikim, kulam niskayim berabi uvanov. These seven midos, the chachamim enumerated for the tzadikim, were all found by Rebbe and his children. There's a well-known story in the Gemara that Rebbe Yehoshua did not look nice. I'm not sure if there was a deformity or something wrong with him. And the Caesar's daughter, the Caesar's daughter, said, "Ei chachma fo ara b'kli mukhor. You have such tremendous wisdom in such an ugly container. How could that be? How do you explain such an ugly container that holds such wisdom?" So he said to her, "Tell me, your father has wine. How does he store his wine? What kind of containers?" She said, "Kli cheres, in earthenware." So he said to her, "I understand, you're Malchus, you're royal. What are you putting your wine in simple earthenware containers? Shouldn't you put it in silver and gold?" So she went and instructed the attendants in the house to move all the wine from earthenware jugs to silver and gold. The wine all turned sour. The melech, whether it was the governor or the kesar, he finds out that the wine turns sour, and he summons his daughter. Who told you this crazy thing? Who told you to put the wine in silver and gold? So she said, "Rabbi Yeshua." So he was summoned to the melech, and he says, "Why did you tell my daughter to do this? You ruined all my wine." So he said, "I just answered her the way she answered me. She said to me, how can you explain, how can you justify such wonderful wisdom in an ugly container, in an ugly vessel?" So I told her that wine is best kept in a kli mechur. Wine is best preserved in an ugly container, in an earthenware vessel. So too, Torah will be preserved in a vessel that's ugly, rather than a vessel that's beautiful. So they asked the question, they asked of Yeshua, there are plenty of good-looking Talmidei Chachamim, what does that mean, that the Chachma only is preserved in an ugly vessel? And he said, if they would be uglier, there'd no more Torah. The Shim Ben Yochai is quoted as saying, Noi and Kayach and Oishan, all these things are appropriate for tzaddikim. So right off the bat, there are plenty of tzaddikim who don't have these things. There are plenty of tzaddikim who have physical issues. They're not beautiful. There are plenty of tzaddikim who are weak. There are plenty of tzaddikim who are poor, and on and on. There are those who are childless, those who don't have children or grandchildren. So the Mishnah isn't saying that these things will assuredly be found by someone who's a tzaddik and a talmid chacham, and if he's missing these things, it's an indication that he's not a chacham, he's not a tzaddik. That's not at all the intent. What the Mishnah is saying is, that there are these things in the Bria, these things that are in the world, and it's meant for, and it's appropriate for, the Chachamim and the Tzaddikim. It's true, once it's in the world, it'll be, even if it's not with Chachamim, even if it's not Tzaddikim, it's out there. But their creation, their essence, was meant and appropriate for the Chacham and Tzaddikim. As far as the story in the Gemara of Yeshua, he was making a point that he thinks people would be bigger Tamid Chachamim if they'd be ugly. So what's his emphasis? Yeshua's emphasis is that gaiva, arrogance, is a direct contradiction to growing in Torah and Chachmah. Someone who's arrogant is not going to be able to achieve greatness in Torah. So if someone's physical handsomeness, beauty, will lead to arrogance, so then he's going to be lacking in Torah. And even if you find people who know a lot of Torah, and they are blessed with Noi, Yeshua said they might know even more if they weren't. If they weren't so Noi, they might even know more Torah than that. Why is it so important? What is the point of Shemini Chai? That Noi, Koyach, Oysher, Kavod, these things are Noel et Tzadikim and Noel Oilam. So this really goes back to another Gemara, which is argued about in the Rishonim. The Gemara describes the characteristics that are necessary of a Navi. And the Gemara says a Navi has to be a Gibor. A Navi has to be an Ashir. A Navi has to be strong. He has to be wealthy. He has to be smart. He has to have all these midos. And there are some who take it literally, that a Navi has to be wealthy. How is Moshe Rabbeinu wealthy? Moshe Rabbeinu, he became wealthy from the Pesilas of Luchos. The Bereshim took sapphire for Luchos and told him to chisel out, and the stone that was left was Moshe's personal property, and he was very wealthy. Where is Moshe's Gevura? Moshe Rabbeinu is very strong. No one could put up the Mishka. No one was strong enough. He could pick up the Urios and put them over the top of the oil, the Medrash says, Rashi means a Chumash. So we find references in Chazal of Moshe's being financially well off and Moshe Rabbeinu being physically strong. But there are those who argue, says, no, it's not Pshat. The Pshat is, he has to be a Gibor. Ezehu Gibor, HaKodesh Yisro. He has to be an Ashir. Ezehu Ashir, HaSemeach B'chalko. This isn't meant literally physically strong. It means he has tremendous midos that he controls his Yetzer Hara. It doesn't mean that he's financially well off. It means that he's happy with what he has. So there's two approaches in how to learn this Gemara. The Gemara lists these are requirements for a Navi. So if you tell me the requirements are midos tovos, that he should be kovish es yitzro and sameach b'chelko and mechaber es abrius and all these kind of things, which that makes very sensible to us. So you want to be a Navi, you have to be on a high moral level. You have to have a high standard, and you have to have basically worked on yourself to the point that you are a Baal Midas type. So then it could be a Navi. That's very understandable to us. But there is an opinion, not that way, the opinion that it's literal. The Navi has to be wealthy, and the Navi has to be strong. And the Navi, so where does that come in? Where does that go together with the concept of the Navi? What is a Navi? A Navi is someone, HaKadosh Baruch, who talks to directly. It's direct communication between Hashem and man. That is Nevuah. Ruach HaKodesh is divine inspiration. A person is inspired. He has this idea. Is it from Hashem? He himself doesn't know. The Baal Ruach HaKodesh doesn't even know if it's Ruach HaKodesh or not. We could say it's Ruach HaKodesh. It might not be Ruach HaKodesh. He doesn't know for sure. When it is Ruach HaKodesh, it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's divinely inspired. But he, the recipient of the Ruach HaKodesh, doesn't necessarily have to know that it's Ruach HaKodesh. There are people today that have Ruach HaKodesh. If you ask them, they'll deny it. They don't know that they have Ruach HaKodesh. We could say they have Ruach HaKodesh, but they don't know. The Baal Ruach HaKodesh doesn't know for sure. Nevuah, there's nothing to talk about. When you have nevuah, you have nevuah. You know you have nevuah. It's not like did I or did I die. If Hashem spoke to you, Hashem spoke to you. It's a direct communication. It's not just an inspiration. It's a direct communication of Hashem and man. The only difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah and everyone else's nevuah was aspakla meira, aspakla she'ena meira. It's not a clear communication. It's a little needs interpretation of the Navi himself. But it is Hashem communicating with man. That is what nevuah is. It makes sense to us that you're dealing with someone who is in a high, high madrega. Where does financial wealth and physical strength come into the picture? So the pshat is, I believe it's the Ran who says in his drushas, the reason why the Navi has to be physically strong and financially well off is because the Navi has a task, he has a charge, to tell people things and hopefully they're going to listen to him. Some people look up to wealthy people. Some people look up to strong people. Some people look up to intellectually smart people. The Navi has to have all the midos that would make him acceptable to people. So he has to be financially well off. He has to be a Gibor. He has to be a Chacham. All these things in a very simple physical sense, because that's what will make his message something people tune into. It's true, there'll always be a group of people who will listen to a tzaddik, even if he is not wealthy and not strong and not chacham, whatever it is. Just because it's a tzaddik. But a lot of people won't. So therefore, for the Navi to be an effective Navi, the Gemara says he has to be wealthy and he has to be strong and he has to be smart, so that whichever group of people he's going to address and tell his nevuah to, they'll be open to listen to what he has to say. That's one approach. Again, the others, I believe it's the Rambam, disagrees. That's not what it means at all. It means purely midas tovos. Lomid bekal adam, kovesh yisitzos me'avachelko. That's how the Rambam learns. But this is machlokes. Machlokes we shine him in the prerequisites. So getting back to our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is saying, Hanoi, Koyach, Oyesher, Kovod are all good things for tzaddikim. Why? Because some people will learn from a tzaddik just because he's a tzaddik, but other people won't. They won't. They'll learn from a tzaddik if he is good-looking, they'll pay attention to him. If he's strong, they'll pay attention to him. If he's wealthy, they'll pay attention to him. If he's very smart, they'll pay attention to him. You know, being smart is not a requirement to being a tzaddik. A person could be a tzaddik and not be a chacham. But when the tzaddik is a chacham, more people will gravitate to the tzaddik and pay attention to the tzaddik. So I think that's how we should understand this Mishnah. Certainly there were great tzaddikim and chachamim who did not have all of these midos. The concept of what Mishnah Mechai is trying to convey is when you have these midos that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam created in the world, they're best suited for the chachamim, because then the chacham who has the noy and has the kayach and has the ush and has the kavod and has the chachamah, and some people look up to zikna as something important, some people look to seva, some to banim, whatever it is that you think is important in the world, this person has it, so you want to be close to him, you want to listen to him. That's why it's good for a tzaddik to have those things, because everyone's different. And we want the tzaddik's message to be well received, and therefore when he has these traits, people who have different things that they value will be attracted to him. Yeah?
But why did Yeshua say the opposite? Like, didn't he
manage? In the Gemara of Yeshua? Yeah. Again, the Bas Kesar couldn't understand. Why, you're such a wise man. Why are you so ugly? And it taught her a lesson that good things are preserved in an ugly vessel. So he was saying Torah is best preserved in an ugly vessel. So again, the Gemara said, as there were people who were not ugly who had Torah, and he answered that they would have had more Torah if they weren't so good looking. So what we said earlier was his nekuda, his point is that if your beauty leads to arrogance, then it will interfere with your ability to accomplish in Torah. But if a person does not let his beauty interfere, or he doesn't realize his noy, essentially what it means, so then it actually is advantageous. noy is actually advantageous because people will be attracted to that person to listen to that person has to say and pay more attention to him. We find the same thing, by the way, with women. The Chumash goes out of its way to tell us how beautiful Sarah Imenu was. Why do we care about how beautiful Sarah Imenu was? It's so important to know how beautiful she was. Why is that significant that Torah has to tell us? And it's not just Sarah Imenu after Sarah Imenu, then about Rachel and Rivka and about Tanakh. Why is it important to know these things? Why is that significant to know the Torah has to tell me Yifei Torah, Yifei Mareh? That's what's important. That's what the Torah values. Why doesn't the Torah tell me she was a Baal Tzedakah? She was an anivus. Tell me things that are important. What are you telling me? How nice she looked. Why is that significant that the Torah has to tell me about her beauty? And Avraham Avinu was so nervous about her beauty because no one in Mitzrayim ever saw someone as beautiful as Sarah Imenu, and he's all beside himself. How am I going to bring her to Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim, a bunch of ugly people. They're going to take one look at Sarah Imenu, they'll be totally enthralled by her beauty. What's going to be? And in fact, he had what to worry. As soon as they see her, they say, this one's fit for the Melech, and no one dares touch her because they know that the higher up will want her until she goes up to the Melech and Papa takes her. Clearly, she was exceedingly beautiful. And it plays into that whole story with Paro and later on with Abimelech. So why does the Torah go out of its way to tell me how beautiful she is? So there is a explanation in Parshas Chayei Sarah, because in Chayei Sarah comes up again. Yimei Chayei Sarah, 127, her beauty, right? At 20 was like she was 7. Again, whatever that means, but it's emphasizing the importance of her beauty. Like, what do we care about how beautiful she was? That even when she dies, that's her epitaph, that her beauty was such. So the Sefer Be'er Mechoikik explains that Sarah Imenu's beauty was a tool. She used her beauty as a tool by which she could attract women to come to listen to what she had to say. Avraham Avinu was Megayer the Anoshim, Sarah Imenu was Megayer the Noshim. And perhaps if she wasn't so beautiful, women wouldn't come. Maybe she wouldn't be able to speak and reach out to ladies the way she did because she was so beautiful. So the Torah emphasizes and repeats over and over how beautiful she was and how she carried herself. And this became a tool, a kli that she can use to give a message that people would be receptive to. That's important. Not so much that she was physically beautiful as much as how she used it, and that became a tool in which to teach, to attract people. And again, she was dealing with women. And I'm sure she dressed nice, even though it doesn't say it specifically. It's all the whole concept that she had to present herself in such a way that people wanted to hear what she had to say. And then she could teach them about the Ribbono Shel Olam, and she could makarv them and megayer them, and that's what she did. So when we say that noy is important for a tzaddik, and koyach and oishet, none of these are an end unto itself. All of these, I think, are to be understood as a tool, as a means by which a person will be well-received, and what he says will be accepted, and people will come to him, and people will listen to him, and pay attention to him, the same way like we said by the Navi. So I think that's the point of this Mishnah. Yes, there were people who did not have all these. There were people who were uglier, and there were people who were not strong, and there were people... We know that. The end, Rebbe, these midos, Shemana Chacham, we found by Rebbe and his sons. Perhaps that was the only time you had all of these midos by such a great person. It was by Rebbe and his sons. You'll have some with these, not the others, and that's the way it goes. And you're not going to have... It's very rare to find one person with all these characteristics. But I think that's the point of the Mishnah, that these are tools of the tzaddik, that they can use them to get close to people, and people be willing to get close to them, and then they could influence them and teach them, and what they say is well received.
Right. How come all like the gedolim, like they're not into like, if they have money they give it away, and they're not like maybe bills, but like, you know, like people like, you know, I'm saying like gedolim, they live in small apartments and they're not into wealth, and it's not like they try to like dress like really nice to attract people, or like, I don't know, but
Your question is only on wealth?
No. I mean, also like beauty, like they don't, it's not like unimportant, but they don't focus on these things, and then it's just kind of saying like,
you want to know why don't tzaddikim, you're not using the word flaunt, but you mean like flaunt, whether it's their wealth or their strength or beauty or anything like that, in order to achieve these goals and attract it.
Try to
right?
Like, stay away from okay. These things.
So one thing for sure, by the Hasidic world, the Rebbes are malochim, they're malchus, they're kings, they're regal. And therefore everything about them is regal. And their entourage, and the silver on their table, and the gold menorah, it's regal, it's royalty, and that's how they, that's their avodah. And that's unique, basically, to the Hasidic world. It's very rare to find in the non-Hasidic world that concept. You found it a little bit in Slobodka. In Europe, they had that kind of emphasis, but it wasn't universally embraced. But I think the real question you're asking is that we know the tzaddikim that we look up to are not living wealthy lifestyles, and they're not, they're hiding from all these things, right? Yeah. So I think the answer is very simple. I might be wrong, but I'll tell you the answer that I think the answer is. Everyone knows what a big tzaddik the Chafetz Chaim was. Not everyone realizes what a goyin in Torah he was. He was brilliant, brilliant Torah scholar. Absolutely brilliant. And not everyone realizes that. If you learn through all his Svarim, you begin to realize he was unbelievable. But no one appreciates him like that because of his tzidkus. Like his tzidkus overshadowed his ga'inus. So the way I heard it, I believe it was Reb Shach and Reb Aaron Cutler who were discussing this issue. Why is it that everyone recognized the Chafetz Chaim's tzidkus and not his ga'inus? And they went to Brisker Rav to ask him, like, why is it that we all think of Chafetz Chaim as a big tzaddik and not as such a ga'in? He said, unbelievable ga'in. And the Brisker Rav says, Pashat, I'll tell you why. The Chafetz Chaim davened his whole life that no one should realize his ga'inus. But the Chafetz Chaim never davened that no one should see his tzidkus because he didn't think he was a tzaddik. And that's why we all see his tzidkus. So we don't always notice his ga'inus. So to answer your question, tzaddikim don't think they're tzaddikim. And therefore, they're not going to worry about the noy, the kerch, the oishav, the kavod to be able to influence people because they hold they're not. That's not about me. It's about someone else. So therefore, they live very simple, very, very, you know, far from all these midos, because they don't see themselves as tzaddikim. I'm not a tzaddik. These are tzaddikim. They have to act that way. I'm not a tzaddik, and therefore they hide from it. The rabbis in the Hasidic world, you know, they are the tzaddikim, and therefore that's their position, and therefore they are open with all these things. But in the non-Hasidic world, tzaddik, I'm not a tzaddik. So Chafetz Chaim never even thought to daven that his tzidkus should be hidden, because he didn't think of himself as a tzaddik. That's why we all know what a tzaddik he was. I think that might be the answer to your question. The next Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, and Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says, Pam achas hayisim ahalach b'derech, one time I was traveling, u'pogu b'yodam echad, I came across a man, v'nosni shalom, he gives me shalom, v'chazat shalom, I answered shalom, aleich, aleich, shalom. Amar Lee says, Rabbi, me'ezim okamata, where are you from? I said to him, me'ir g'dayla shachachom, shalsemini, I'm from a city, it's a great city, chachomim, soifrim. Amali Rebbe, Rasan Khashitadu Iman bin Khamen, he says, Rebbe, how about living with us? And I'll give you Elif Alofim Din Rezov Avonim Tovus Magolius. I'll make you wealthy, thousands of golden coins and precious stones and jewels. Amarti lo I said, and Atanoisinli called Kesiv Zav Avon Tovus Magosh, you could give me all the silver and gold and precious stones and jewels in the world. Any dar al Makam Tar, I'm only going to live in a Makam Tar. And so it's written in Sefer Tehillim by David Melech Yisrael, Tov li teras picho me'al fezav chesav, the Torah of your mouth is more precious to me than thousands of gold and silver. Not only that, Shoshas p'torash l'odin, a person dies, e malav l'odin l'kesel l'zav, v'lavan t'ovis magolis, a person can't take with him after 120 years his silver and gold and precious stones and jewels. Ela Torah u'maisim Torah. The only thing he takes with him is Torah and good deeds, like it says. When you go, that's when you lay down, watch over your cover in the grave. When you wake up again, that will be your speech to Olam Haba. The Oymen, it says, besides the, to me is the silver and the gold, says Hashem. If you're familiar with the Siyam and Masechta, we say this pasuk, at the end of every Masechta, as part of a Siyam, we're davening that this that we accomplished in our learning should accompany us for Olam Haba. In any event, you have this story. It's a well-known story of Yisrael Kisma. And this fellow says, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Every person has his price. That's a saying people say. Everyone has his price. Name your price. Whatever it is. You want a house. You want a car. You want two cars. A pool in the backyard. You got it. Whatever you want. Come live in my town. I'll take care of you for the rest of your life. And he says, I'm not going. I'm not interested. I'm staying where I am. And the question is, why did he refuse so quickly when we know there's a concept of going out to places that don't have yeshivas and building yeshivas, places that don't have kailim and building kailim, places that don't have Torah and you build Torah. You go on a seed program to a community, and maybe after a few years of a seed program in the summer, they're going to have the idea of maybe we should have a kollel in our community, and after a few years, if they're that, maybe they'll start a yeshiva, and so on and so forth. You have to build Torah. You can't just ignore all the place they don't have. Rabbi Kollel Zichron Avracha would send out all across the United States his kollel fellows to start yeshivas and kollelim. They weren't in kollel like we are today. 5, 6, 7, 10 years, unheard of. Barbaran, 2, 3 years, goodbye. He'd kick you out. Go. Go to Denver. Go to Chicago. Go to Los Angeles. He would send them out all over the country. All over the country to build Torah. Shaka Fire Mandalovich, the same thing with the day schools. So, what do you mean? They're in a Mokum Torah. You're sitting in a yeshiva. You have a Gvaldik Rosh Yeshiva. You have a Chabur of people learning. Why should I go out to a community where there's nothing doing? It's true, there are yidden there, and there's shuls there, but that's it, there's nothing else. So how would I go to such a place? And yet you see the Gedolim sent people there. They sent their Talmidim to go and build Torah. There's a concept of building Torah. You go, that's what you do, and you develop an interest, and you build Torah in these communities, and I really think the communities that don't, or that didn't, are going to disappear. Only the communities that had the kollelim, that did grow, and then eventually the yeshivas, are the ones that thrive. So what is Mishum Mekisma saying? No, Mishum Mekisma, I'm not going. So I think the pshat is, and I suspect others say this as well, when Mishum Mekisma said, you can offer me all the money you want in the world, I'm only living in a Mokum Torah. He understood from this fellow that there was no interest in his town to build Moistus of Torah, to generate an interest in learning Torah. He wanted a token Talmud Chacham in his town. We need a Talmud Chacham in our city. I'll pay you, it's come out the money. You sit and learn. Just sit and learn. That's your job. We'll support you, we'll take care of you. You just sit and learn. But don't teach us. No classes. No shiurim. You just do your thing. Our city needs our resident Talmud Chacham. So come move to our city and be our resident Talmud Chacham. But there's absolutely no interest in growth and building. So he said goodbye. Any der el makom tar. I'm not interested in you. I'm not going to be your token Talmud Chacham. I am not coming with you. I'm going to stay in my city of Mishnah and Sofer. You tell me you want your city to be a city of Chachamim and Sofer also? Now we can have a conversation. You tell me you want to build in your community yeshivas and Beis Yankivs and yeshiva katanas. We'll have a conversation. Then we can talk. But you want none of that. You're totally not interested in that. Not for you, not for the Baal Batin. Just that you should have someone in your city that you could say, in our shtat, in our city, We have such a big Talmud Chacham, a source of pride for the community, the basically a trophy in the shul, sitting on the mizruch, it's like on a shelf. We have, look who we have in our city. I'm not coming to your town. I'm not interested in that. Any dar el makom Torah. You want to create Torah in your community. You want to build Torah in community. You want to spread Torah, that there should be shiurim, and people should come in the morning to learn, and people come in the evening to learn, and some in the afternoon to learn. Then we could talk. That's what the Gedolim did. The Gedolim sent their students out to create a renaissance, if you will. I don't know if it's a renaissance. The United States had nothing to begin with, so it wasn't a return to something that was once. It was just to create something new that didn't exist before. Go out, take the midbar of the United States, and turn it into a thriving Makom Torah. And that's what they did. That's what these Talmidim did. So that's how I understand this Mishnah. You want to create and generate something in the community, that's great. You want me to just be a resident, token, tzaddik, chacham, and no one has anything to do with me, because I sit in my corner, you give me all this farm I want, and I sit and learn? Not interested. I'll stay where I am. For that, I don't have to move. Money is not going to sway me. That was what Yes Mikisma said. Unfortunately, there were people who were swayed by such arguments. This went on maybe even before World War II, certainly after World War II, in the United States, where you had some great Talmidei Chachamim, many of them students of Slabodka Yeshiva in Europe, who had no parnasa. They could not find jobs. And they were offered positions, which many of them took, as conservative rabbis. Unfortunately, there's quite a long list of Slabodka alumni in the conservative movement of that period in the United States. And the burden of Parnassah weighed on them, and this was a way for them to be supported. Their Baal Batim had no interest in learning. These were great Talmidei Chacham, some of them, but they succumbed. This is really the story of Menashe, the grandson of Moshe Benu, and the end of Sefer Shoftim, who became the Kohen for Pesach Micha, and essentially he was disillusioned, he was poor, here he's a grandson of Moshe Benu, he's a Levi, and there's no Parnasa. And Micha offers him a great job. You'll be my high priest. You'll be my high priest, and he takes the job. And eventually, the Chachamim got him out of there, and they found out what he was doing. They convinced him to leave his job. He didn't do Avodah Zarah. People would bring offerings, he'd say, I'll take care of it, and then he would eat it himself. Like, he wouldn't do Avodah Zarah. But he had the position, because it was a good position. They gave him a clothing allowance and a place to stay and a panosa and then money. So he took the job. And the Gemara goes on to say that a person shouldn't be embarrassed to do any menial job to support himself. But these people, he didn't want to do that. And you find this did occur with numerous students of Slabodka Yeshiva who ended up conservative rabbis. And even if they themselves remained Orthodox their whole lives, the same cannot be said about their children and ultimately grandchildren. So it's a sad chapter. But those were the ones who were willing to pay money, good money, to have a token scholar in their congregation. They weren't interested in changing. They weren't interested in learning. They just wanted to have the token scholar. And that's where you had a very similar kind of thing.